Now, the older I get, the more generations I am removed from the current young record buyers. So I always have to bear in mind that I no longer have the perspective to consume, appreciate, absorb some of the new trends. But I must always keep my mind open to the notion that as some of these new modalities come along and they have such a sweeping appeal, for example, rap and hip hop, which in the beginning was an expression from the ghetto. It was the inner cities standing up and saying, we have a voice. And it expressed the concerns of the oppressed. Now, to imagine that it would become such a sweeping global tidal wave and that Caucasians and young white people in great numbers would buy and support this music, it sort of boggles the mind. And it's an illustration that from the vantage point of age and removal from immediacy, you cannot make any generalizations about how applicable any form of music may be. You want to go back, you know, to the Rolling Stones, where people thought that this was, some kind of horrible abuse. It wasn't music. There's a singer probably that you wouldn't know about named Red McKenzie. Red McKenzie and the Mount City Blue Blowers. He came out of St. Louis in about 1928, and he was a contractor and a leader, and he formed a group called Red McKenzie and the Mount City Blue Blowers. He played on a tissue paper and a comb, sort of a kazoo, and he played with some great musicians. He also sang ballads in a very nasal tone, and I can't explain. There's a writer named Dick Sudhalter, and I said to him, Dick, how do you explain Red McKenzie to somebody who is outside the pale? He says, you don't. It's inexplicable. In other words, it's trying to teach somebody a mantra in Sanskrit and teach it overnight when actually you would have needed 20 years of deep study of the language to begin to be eligible to understand it. So here's the thing about hip-hop. It's another example of a facet of black culture affecting the general pop white culture. Whether it was the early jazz of Louis Armstrong, whether it was the zoot suits, whether it was the bebop berets and the beard, whether it was the infusion of black lingo into the white idiom and into clothing. Here again, this thing is another example of the tremendous black influence on white culture in every aspect, especially the hip-hop thing. You see white kids walking along with shorts, dragging down, from their butts down almost to their ankles, their hats on backwards, and these oversized jackets. I don't know what they imagine they think they're doing, except their acceptance and embracing of a style that they find nurturing comes again from black. It's passive understanding how black continuously in every era and every generation makes its very strong mark on pop style, pop culture, pop mores. So this is hip hop once again. One reason the music made such an influence, starting with King Oliver, Louis Armstrong, Jelly Roll Morton, Bessie Smith, and then Fletcher Henderson and Jimmy Lunston and so on, because the music is irresistible. And also because, there was a time when popular music was jazz. Jazz was popular music. Benny Goodman's band was jazz, and it was on the pop charts. The same with Count Basie. The same with Billie Holiday. Now it's a subculture. It afforded a relief from the blandness of white culture. The kids had been, I'm not just saying the kids, generations had been raised on, very bland popular music. Everything from Victor Herbert to Perry Como. Now here comes something else that, man, this has got a flavor to it. This is like this is like some really good tacos with some jalapenos in it. In other words, it awakened dormant appetites, black music. So that's how it came in.